going on today. And I would like to mention to you a book that was written several years ago by an American surgeon. His name was William Nolan, N-O-L-E-N. It's called Healing, A Doctor in Search of a Miracle. Healing, A Doctor in Search of a Miracle by William Nolan, N-O-L-E-N. What he was trying to do was find a miracle taking place somewhere. Now, of course, anybody with half a lick of sense going into this knows that there's an awful lot of fakery going on. And he said, sure, I know that's true. I know that most of it's fakery. But, he said, just because every crow you ever saw was black, that doesn't mean there's not a white one somewhere. And I'm going to try to find that one white crow. I'm going to try to find one miracle that I can believe is really a miracle, that I can test and try to show that it's really a miracle. He tried to be as objective about this, I believe, as he possibly could. And he invested his time and his life in this for quite a while. He spent 18 months over in the Philippines researching the claims of psychic surgery and spiritual healing, and made some decisions about that. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but it just has to do with taking some person down and laying them out and kneading on their stomach. Jim Jones down in Guyana did this kind of thing too, as you may remember. Knead around on their stomach a while and then stick your hand behind your back and pull out a handful of chicken liver, and you've taken this tumor out of this person. And people would believe this kind of thing. Well, this is what Nolan found out was going on over there in the Philippines when he looked at what they were doing at close range with a trained surgeon's eye. The masses of bloody tissue that they removed from these patients' bodies were merely palmed animal parts, or in some cases even pieces of cotton soaked in red dye. And it didn't even look that much like it when you got up close to it. He had himself operated on by one of these psychic surgeons, and out came a phony malignant tumor from his intestines, but the incision had been totally faked and the entire operation was based on sleight of hand. So he concluded that that's all there was involved in that. Did these psychic surgeons really believe in what they're doing? He concluded that they did. That they, in many cases, actually had convinced themselves that they had this power. You know, this is an interesting and frightening phenomenon in the human mind. If you say something often enough, and you have enough people feeding back to you that they believe it, you may begin to believe it too. I personally think that this may have happened to Joseph Smith, the Mormon prophet. It started out as a fraud, total and absolute fraud. I've got this golden Bible here. But then as he got on into this, and it snowballed, and he had all these people believing him, and he kept teaching it over and over, I think that he may, in his short lifetime, actually have come to believe these things himself. We are past masters at the art of self-deceit, and most people would rather be deceived than have to face the truth, at least in some area of life. We want to be deceived. People don't want the truth. You just try to tell somebody the truth, and you try to tell everybody the truth, you may not have a whole lot of friends if you don't hold back a little on the truth. Because people want to be deceived. Truth makes people uncomfortable. So I think there's a possibility that these people, in many instances, really believe what they're doing. Some of them even go into a trance while they're performing this, but they're deceived just the same. Nolan also followed Catherine Kuhlman around for quite some period of time, and although he didn't see any miracles from her, he concluded that it was impossible to say that she was dishonest or that she was insincere regarding the things that she was talking about. He believed that she believed that she could do what she said she was doing. He also concluded that she was absolutely wrong in her belief that her patients could be cured of organic diseases through the work that she was doing. There was a difference in the work that was done, not only by Nolan, but by several others, between psychosomatic problems and organic problems. Psychosomatic problems, of course, can be helped by this kind of thing, because what you're doing is getting the person to believe that they're going to be all right. Mary Baker Eddy worked on this same kind of a principle. One time I read the book The Will to Believe by Marcus Bach, and another time The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. Both of these books point up what a difference real belief can make in life. But organic diseases like cancer and diabetes and gallstones which are not really psychosomatically based, at least as far as we know, they're not going to be healed by somebody in a faith healing costume, no matter how much belief there is. Nolan concludes, quote, "These are diseases that healers, even the most charismatic, cannot cure." So that was the end result of his findings, and I think it's worth passing on, because here was someone who was looking at it not from a religious point of view, but from a medical point of view. Now the question comes, which was asked way last week sometime by Jay Graham, and we're just now getting to it, but we haven't forgotten it. What part does the devil have to play in this? Do we attribute these things to the devil, or do we attribute them to the human mind? That was the general idea behind the question, I think. His was keyed more toward the devil, and I'm keying it more toward the human mind. I'm not sure that we have to give the devil too much credit for this, except, of course, in the way that we give him credit for all error. But I don't think we have to give him credit for supernatural powers necessarily. Now, I want him to have all the credit that he deserves. I want the devil to get everything that's coming to him, and I'm sure he will. But I'm not sure that we have to look at it as though anything I can't explain has to be either the work of God or the devil in a supernatural sense. Because I think there is a third alternative, and that's the psychological alternative. All healing that takes place is divine. I skinned my knee yesterday. It started healing just as soon as I skinned it. And if you have a normal body, that's the way yours operates as well. Don't underestimate the power of the human body in connection with the human mind to cause things to come about. The witch doctor over in the Philippines tells his patient that he's going to die. And if that patient has enough confidence in that witch doctor, he may well die. This happens. It's what voodoo is all about. Belief. It's been estimated that 72% of the hospital beds at any given time, say today, 72% of the hospital beds in this country are occupied by people who are in problems psychosomatically. Now that doesn't mean they're not sick. They're just as sick as anybody else. But it's a disease that has been prompted by their thought processes. And often it didn't happen overnight. They developed habits of thinking through the years that have led them into that path. And now they're thinking of themselves as sick. This is one good thing, I think, that came out of the work of Mary Baker Glover Patterson Eddy, to give her husband proper credit. One good thing that came out of her work. She helped us to see the connection between the human body and the human mind. She went way too far with it, of course, denying physical reality, denying that matter even exists, really. She had mothers in childbirth who would develop hemorrhages and wouldn't do anything for them. Say, just deny it. You're not bleeding. You just think you are. And just let them lay there and bleed to death. You can go too far with this real quickly. But she did, by her extreme approach to this, show us that there was a connection. And now, we've finally gotten to the place where we have a new field in research called psychoimmunology. It could only be developed in these last few years. Physiology had to be well in place, psychology had to be well in place. But now we're talking about psychoimmunology, talking about what the Bible has said all the time, as you think, so you are. There's a lot of truth in that. As you think, so you are. Whatever flashes into your mind, your brain begins to attempt to bring that about. You program the computer. You decide what's going to go into it. And as we said yesterday, all the things that you see or hear are recorded and stored away. It's all fed in. If you feed a lot of garbage in, there's going to be garbage there for it to work on. Everything you put in is important. This is one of the ramifications of pornography in our time. You don't just involve yourself in pornography for a while and then step out of that and say, well, I can step away from it anytime I want to. Because now that you put it in, it's all there. It's still there. And you don't know when it's going to come back. Maybe at a very inopportune time. And so you're deciding the future course of your life even when you engage in that for a day. Because you are so fearfully and wonderfully made. You program the computer. If you put in a sickness program, you're going to be sick. There's just no question about it. And if the people around you program you in that way and you accept that programming, this can easily occur to you. If everybody walks up to Carol Warren and says, "Boy, Carol, are you feeling all right? You look kind of pale to me today." And somebody else who wasn't there walks up and says, "Well, you just getting over the flu, or what's the problem?" You have 8 or 10 people do that to him in one day, and he may be sick tonight. This is true. Don't try it, because it can occur. It makes a difference. Really, this is what hypnotism is all about. It's what you believe that counts. Just as long as you don't go too far with that statement. But in hypnotism, you're getting the hypnotic subject to believe an idea. And if you believe that you're holding out to him a red-hot poker and he takes a hold of it, he's going to flinch and come back, and in some places, blisters even occur on the hands. I don't understand how. But it has been done. Anxiety in life. Marvin was talking about worry yesterday. Concern over things that haven't happened yet. Concerned over things that may or may not happen. Worry and anxiety place more stress on your heart even than physical exercise does. That's hard to believe, but it's evidently true. But what this means is that if our minds can make us sick, they can also make us well on the same basis. And I think you've all had this experience. I know I've had it many times. You might get up in the morning and just feel absolutely rotten. But you say to yourself, or I say to myself, "Man, I feel great. I have never felt better in my life." And you can psych yourself up if you want to. Now, up to a point, of course. If you've got something organically wrong, there comes a time when you can't pull it off anymore. But generally speaking, what you put on that computer makes all the difference.
That would work for our spiritual health, too.
Sure, of course.
In the classroom, one of the things they teach students is positive reinforcement. Just the opposite of what you were saying about the pale face.
Uh-huh.
Tell a student something often enough, "You can succeed, you can do this, I know you've got the ability."
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon the student who just was struggling so hard and always failing before, suddenly starts doing very well. Maybe it's the same thing with the body, that's what you're saying?
That's right. And especially when we're young, since most of us have no real clear conception of ourselves, we tend to become what the people around us expect us to become. Frightening.
As a man thinketh, so is he.
As he thinketh, so he is, yes. Absolutely.
And Jesus said that from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if you're thinking something or another, and you go talk in the same line, you see, you make yourself known for sure.
Right. Dennis?
This is the same kind of psychology that the scriptures advocate, isn't it, when we encourage one another?
Right.
It may not be physical healing I'm talking about, but we all need the spiritual healing, and we need to use it more.
True. And also, whatsoever things are true, honest, just, etc., think on these things. Why? Not just because it's a command and we ought to do it, but because it makes all the difference in the world as to what kind of people we become, what our outlook is.
It's good for you.
Yeah. Whether or not we're just existing and plodding through every day, or whether you have an ebullient, functional, happy, joyous life, it makes the difference, eh?
I think, though, there is a balance between positive and negative. There are certain circumstances that the negative would be required.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It could always be positive.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
If there is no fear in a child,
sure,
whatsoever, in touching something or in telling him no to certain things,
oh, yeah,
you see what you come out with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think that touches this other question. I agree wholeheartedly.
If we didn't have any fear of sin, would we fall into it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm not talking about not having fear. I'm talking about trying to develop your abilities as much as you can. And one of your abilities is to keep going when you're not feeling well. And if you do that, you're more likely to get to feeling better than if you pamper yourself, I think. I think we ought to wear out, not rust out, personally. Marvin, are you going to say? I think most of us pamper ourselves way too much, and that we ought to push ourselves to the limit. And if we die, whether we live or die, we're the Lord's anyway. I'd rather die right now than go ahead and pamper myself and thread myself along until I'm 95. Personal. That's a personal point of view. Tom.
I heard Oral Roberts' comment on this subject being brought up to him. He's obviously heard about this, that people say, well, these people are just healed because they think positively and they believe they can be. And he still thinks that's a miracle.
Yeah.
Because, see, God told us these things a long time ago before we figured out how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying it's still a miracle.
Yeah. One of the puzzling factors in this discussion, of course, is what do we mean by the term miracle? And that's one thing we'll need to define in our remaining couple of sessions together, is what is the difference between a miracle and something good that happens that's a non-miracle? Where are you going to draw the line between that? And I think there is a place to draw it. In fact, we need to determine the difference between the natural and the providential and the supernatural. The difference being, in a nutshell, as I view it, that the natural is just the world operating as God originally set it in motion by natural law. The providential, using only the natural and not the supernatural, but because of God's magnificent mind, ordering the natural in such a way that the outcome God wanted is produced. Now, that's like the book of Esther. There's not a single miraculous thing in the book of Esther. It was all providential, and yet, obviously, God was working behind the scenes there. But it was through the use of the natural. And then the supernatural would be one step beyond that. And God only moves into third gear when he absolutely needs to. Otto?
In his case of Joseph, too, I think it was God's providence.
It was.
Working all the way through there.
Right. The only supernatural things in the story of Joseph were the dreams.
Yes.
Tom?
And then a lot of the miraculous testimony you hear today is merely providential.
Oh, yes.
Most of what
sure.
you hear is unprovidential.
Yeah.
It's not really miraculous thing we're talking about.
And that doesn't mean that it's no less important. Certainly the providence of God is a wonderful thing, but we need to define between them. And we ought to spend a session on providence, talking about it, because it's a real confusing thing to us, I think.
Well, I think God can perform miracles today. I think he does. But then it's through prayer, whether, you know, quite often you hear about a doctor giving up on someone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first thing you know, they're straight up, you see.
Yeah.
There's been maybe a lot of prayer going on.
Right.
God's the same yesterday and all, every day the same.
Right. Yeah, I tried to point that out the other day, that I think we limit God too much sometimes. We don't know what God might do in a given instance. We know he's not going to do it through some human agent today.
But anything that can be handled through nature will be taken care of that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then through providence, and then requires a miracle,
my
God can do that
too. Yeah, he can. He's certainly not, it's not
but
obligatory on him to do
no,
it.
No, not by the hands of men.
No, not by the hands of men. That's right. And it's not obligatory for him to do it even where the hands of men are not involved. You know, we can pray all we want to and fast all we want to, and we ought to fast and pray. But still, we don't know what that outcome is going to be, because we do not have the same powers that these people have. And when we get to thinking that if we pray right, it's going to happen the way we want it to happen, I think we can get ourselves into some serious problems there. I was practically accused of murdering Doug Phillips 9 years ago, because one brother felt like it was obvious if we prayed right, or if I prayed right, or led a group right in prayer, that he couldn't have died. You see the problems we get into there. And it's a shattering thing for a lot of people if they believe that. And then they have these failures, and they blame themselves because they think they have a lack of faith in God or something. Well, I just don't buy it. Lewis?
There's a matter of discerning for his will. There's always to ask according to his will, believing he will receive, having confidence he will receive it. If we discern his will, then we can be confident that there's nothing to give us confidence for our health.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Carter?
Would you say a miracle is a temporary suspension or shortening of the natural process?
Yeah, I think that the miracles of the Bible in particular went that direction. This is one thing that makes biblical miracles so different from, say, the miracles that are recorded in the Hindu Vedas. The miracles in the Bible do seem to work, I like to say, parallel to nature. Whereas in the Vedas, I was walking through the woods one day and suddenly all the trees turned into popsicles. You know, there's just no point to it. There's nothing even close to natural about it. But the miracles in the Bible were intended to accomplish the same purpose that would have been accomplished naturally if there had been more time or if there had been life.
How about the withered hand or bringing back to sight?
Okay, the withered hand or bringing back to sight. In instances like these, what Jesus did was what the body was trying to do itself, but couldn't do. No, couldn't do, because Jesus was the author of life. He enlivened that. Oh, no. That's why I said time and life, because he is eternal, and time means nothing to him. He's above time, and because he's the author of life. The woman with the issue of blood is another good instance of that. She'd spent all her money for 12 years trying to get this figured out with doctors. But Jesus did, miraculously, what her body wanted to do. Our bodies want to be well. He did what her body wanted to do, but couldn't do it. In that case, it was life again. The feeding of the 5,000 is another illustration of this. All Jesus did was what would have happened naturally if the grain in those 5 barley loaves had been planted in the ground and had grown up into a crop, and then all those grains had been planted and grown up into another crop, and then been harvested and threshed and ground into flour and baked into barley loaves. You could have fed 5,000 people with them. Those two little fish, if they had been given life, could have gone out into the sea and produced a whole multitude of fish enough to feed 5,000 people, and they could have done it pretty quickly. But what Jesus did was take care of the time element and the life element, turning the water into wine. Same thing. All Jesus did was what a grapevine does. Grapevine sucks the water out of the ground, takes it up, puts it in the grape. The grape ferments after it's pressed out, and you've gone from water to wine. But it took you time, and it took life, natural life in the grapevine. Jesus just did it like that, because this was no problem to him. That's what I mean by parallel to nature, rather than just totally off the wall.
I've heard the expression, miracle just a shortcut on nature.
A shortcut, yeah.
He used nature, but then he just stepped over.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Anybody else? Okay. Well, my main point here in going into this was that if the healer can make you believe that you're going to be healed, you may, if you don't have something that's too awful wrong with you. And one indication of this is that a lot of the people who are healed at these healing campaigns, a few days later, are right back into the same predicament they were in before. But for the time being, while they were all pumped up and the adrenaline was flowing, it made a difference for them. I walked up in here this morning and feeling a little bit stiff after our softball exercise yesterday. But now I'm feeling no pain. What was your hand up, Mark? Okay. I think it makes a big difference for us, and we ought to take advantage of this, because God's built it into our minds, up to a given point at least. You don't have to be tired today. I know you're coming off a week and a half of extreme exertion, a lot more than a lot of you are used to, but don't think tired. Think of yourself as being the opposite of tired, whatever that means to you, and it'll make a big difference to you. Otherwise, we're just operating like animals. Basis of instinct and whatever sensual, and I don't mean sexual by sensual, but whatever our senses feed into us, we're just operating on the same level that the animal does. And back in the Proverbs, we were clearly told, be not as the horse or as the mule, but use the mind that God gave you. Use it for all it's worth. And there are so many of these capacities that we don't commonly give ourselves credit for. You're a marvelous creation, and don't sell yourself short. I guess we'd better take a break here for 10 minutes. We'll come back. Probably our best single approach to the argument of whether or not miracles are being performed today by individuals in the world is to ask for a demonstration rather than to argue, rather than to debate about whether or not this is possible. If you find someone who believes that they can raise the dead, and there are many people who claim that they can or feel that they should be able to make the claim, any Mormon, for instance, believes that he ought to be able to raise the dead. They go by such passages as Mark chapter 16. These signs shall follow all them that believe. And then they claim the whole list for themselves. Now they say, I never have done it, but I ought to be able to. And sometimes you'll even find those who claim that they've done it or that they've been present when it was done. The best approach we can take to that, I think, is just simply to say, let's go over to the funeral home and see this done, and then there's no need to argue about it either way. If you can't do it, it's settled. If you can do it, it's settled. I've never had a taker on that. We've never even gotten to the funeral home because there are always lots of excuses that come up. This, I think, is the best single approach to take to this, at least maybe after some other arguments have not met the reception that you thought they might. One time I was studying with a couple of Mormon elders who had come to my door. We'd studied for several sessions, and they continually were saying, well, we don't know the answers to these things, but our church has answers. So finally I persuaded them to let me talk to somebody who knew more about it than they did, and we went over to Independence, to the visitor center there, and got to talk with Alma Burton, who was the leader at that time of the stake from which these boys were sent out. And we locked ourselves in a room for 3 solid hours and talked about these matters, had quite a discussion. But at one point in the discussion, we were dealing with this very issue. Do you really think it's possible for you to drink strychnine or to take cyanide and it won't affect you? And he said, absolutely not. Wouldn't affect me one bit. And I said, all right, the next time you turn your gaze away from me, I'm going to drop a cyanide tablet in your coffee and we'll see what happens. Now, he didn't know me. He didn't know what I might do. He said, you do that and you'll be tried for murder. So I didn't know what to make of it, but I think some faith was shaken. This is one way in which we can bring to reality people who make these spiritual claims, I think. And there aren't a lot of ways to do it. Now, there are all kinds of arguments that could be made about this, and we could talk about it for a long, long time. But I don't know that that would be the most profitable way that we can spend our time. Unless somebody just has something that they need to bring up about it, probably we should go on. There is all kinds of investigation being done with reference to some of the things we were talking about yesterday. As we think, so we are. Even research, as many of you know, into organic diseases and the effect that our attitude over time has on these things. All of us are aware of the testimony of Norman Cousins, who had cancer and decided that he was going to laugh, laughter being a good medicine for the soul, and apparently was relieved of this, in part at least, through laughing at old Marx Brothers movies and so forth and so on. Actually, he was laughing so loud in the hospital that they asked him to leave, and so he rented a motel room for about a third the price and laughed there and was relieved of this. Now, I think there's something to this kind of thing. I certainly wouldn't advise going this route alone. But I think that our attitude has a lot to do with things that we don't even understand yet. In this whole area of strange occurrence, happening, modern miracles, UFOs, psychic phenomenon, ESP, the whole list. There is a little magazine that I used to take by the name of The Skeptical Inquirer that I think is still available that deals with the opposite side of this and tries to explain these things in a natural way. It's an anti-Christian stance that's taken, really. They don't believe these things ever have occurred. But I think you can get a lot of insight by getting a hold of that magazine if you want to. It's always, at least when I used to take it, was always full of new information, debunking Uri Geller and this kind of thing. If you're interested in that, you might want to pick it up. Well, we should go on to the Holy Spirit today because it's not sufficient to talk about what he doesn't do. What does he do and where is he? That's what we need to decide. I have my Bible open here to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 18. I'm going to read that. Flee fornication. Every sin that a man doth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. Talking about a fleshly human body. What? Know ye not that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own?